Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
In the wake of Sandy, the stock markets have reopened, but lots of folks are still waiting for the lights to come back on. From APM, it's the Marketplace Midday Update podcast. I'm Jeff Horwich, and it is the 31st of October. Happy Wednesday. We'll track the aftermath of the storm, of course, but also find out why the Dodge Dart is coming back and acknowledge that it is, of course, Halloween. Boo.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
At last, the number of people without power because of the storm is going down this morning. The latest reported figure at this hour is about 6 million still in the dark, down from a high of 8.5 million. Utilities across the Northeast are working like mad to get the power back everywhere. Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein reports.
51,000 men and women, tree trimmers and line workers from as far away as the West Coast, are trying to restore power in the wake of the storm. Todd Schneider with First Energy, the company that owns Jersey Central Power and Light, says there's lots of work to do.
There's just tremendous destruction to our electrical system. The high winds took down poles, took down wires.
Total it up, more than 900,000 New Jersey customers are in the dark. With so many people out of power, energy producers have been forced to slow production. The region's electrical grid, PJM, which serves 60 million people, can't hold much extra supply.
We are the only commodity that cannot have large storage of our production. So within milliseconds of when we generate the power, it's consumed by the end-use consumer.
PJM's CEO, Terry Boston, says producers can't make as much energy as they usually do.
Systems start speeding up, motors turn too fast, can overheat. So we're very careful to balance the supply and demand.
Boston says the producers probably won't get all of their customers back until next week. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
As the storm passes in New York, the opening bell rang again today on the New York Stock Exchange. A two-day shutdown on Wall Street is almost unheard of. 9/11 shut down trading for 4 days. Not surprisingly, many folks are treating this week as kind of a learning experience. Gus Fauché is senior economist with the PNC Financial Services Group, and he's with me from Pittsburgh. You know, there's not a lot of historical precedent for this. We don't shut down markets very often. Beyond that, is this whole event something that investors should pay much mind to?
I don't think so. This was extraordinary circumstances. The stock exchange was concerned about the safety of its employees and the safety of traders, so they made the decision to shut down for a couple of days. And given the circumstances, that makes sense, and this isn't going to be a regular occurrence.
The original plan, as recently as Sunday night, I think, was to go with electronic trading. This kind of reinforces, I guess, people are still important on Wall Street, aren't they?
That's right. But certainly I think events like this will make exchanges look more closely at whether they want to move to electronic trading in the future, whether they want to have backup systems in place that allow electronic trading in case of physical problems like we've had over the past couple of days.
And we don't know Monday morning quarterback this or Wednesday morning quarterback it as it is too much. But there's a strong current of folks today saying, really, this should not happen again. We've got to do better next time. What do you think?
Well, you know, I mean, this isn't a once-in-a-lifetime kind of thing to have a big storm like this hit New York City over the weekend and cause problems in the work week. You know, I think it's a little bit ridiculous to expect exchanges to operate normally given the circumstances.
All right. Gus Fauché, thank you very much. Senior economist with the PNC Financial Services Group.
Thank you.
So I haven't been able to say this and really mean it, I guess, the last few days. Let's do the numbers. U.S. stock markets are humming again after 2 days off, but on Wall Street, a few hours in, the stormy weather continues. The Dow at this hour is down about 0.2%. The S&P 500 similarly off, and the NASDAQ down about 0.6%. The price of oil, though, is heading up today. At this moment, it's up more than 1%. Part of the explanation may be the sense that demand will quickly resume in the Northeast as the storm passes. A new measure from the Chicago Fed this morning shows business activity in the Midwest continued to contract, but barely, in the first part of this month. And we got earnings today from what is by far the world's largest steelmaker, ArcelorMittal. Profits were the lowest in 3 years. The company's cutting its dividend and its outlook based on slow demand from China and Europe. And we also got earnings today from General Motors, which announced a strong profit for the latest quarter. Like many other companies, GM says it's working hard to trim its losses in Europe, but sales here are solid. And if you're looking to buy a car anytime soon, you might feel a little bit of deja vu when you hit the showroom. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek-Smith has more on why the new car smell and an old car name can be a winning combination.
Silverado, Impala, Corvette, Camaro. General Motors is rejuvenating older Chevy brand names left and right.
This is the new 2013 Chevy Malibu. You know, this is your typical midsize bread and butter family sedan.
Auto analyst Lawrence Ulrich says there's a good reason why car makers cling to old model names.
Automakers have so much time and so many billions of dollars invested in marketing brands that they would prefer to maintain names. Familiarity really helps with buyers.
All the car companies do this. Ford has had a lot of success with the new Mustang, and Chrysler has resurrected several Dodge brands, including its well-known muscle car, the Charger.
This is my brand-new 72 Dodge Charger. Really goes over great with the girls.
Dodge re-released the Charger with a slightly different pitch.
I will be civil to your mother. I will carry your lip balm. And because I do this, I will drive the car I want to drive.
Michelle Krebs is an analyst with Edmunds. She says old model names hold a mystique for younger buyers and a nostalgia for older buyers.
Part of it is they're great names, and naming cars is very challenging. These names have a solid meaning to people, just great heritage that go with them.
Of course, name recognition can go both ways. Edsel, Pinto, those have brand associations too. But even a questionable association isn't always enough to discourage car companies from trying to give names another go. Take the Dodge Dart, which had been mothballed for 36 years.
That was a strange one.
Again, analyst Lawrence Ulrich.
The image of the Dart is, you know, kind of like this doobie-scented like car from the 70s, you know, that you drove around with your high school friends.
The new Dart is based on an Alfa Romeo sports car, and sales have been brisk. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith for Marketplace.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
So now you've had your fill of the big-time business news, and there was plenty of it today. And you'd be forgiven for thinking today is mostly just important because everybody's so relieved to get their stock trades in on the last day of the month. But the last day of the month also makes it, of course, Halloween. And before the storm hit, my New York-based colleague Jeremy Hobson went down to a Halloween store in Manhattan's East Village to meet somebody whose job is perfectly suited for this holiday. His name is Sebastian Von Houten, and here's Jeremy.
My role here at the Halloween Adventure Store is that I'm the master fangsmith.
Fangsmith?
Yes, which means I make custom-made prosthetic fangs.
And what do you make them out of?
The highest quality dental material. It's the same stuff that you use to make dentures and caps and bridges and all sorts of temporary dental work. And I've been doing this for 18 years here.
Wow. Tell me about this room.
This room is the fang shop.
So you
welcome to the dental lab.
Now, so what is that, first of all?
This is a Dremel tool. And a Dremel is a rotary tool. And I use this to carve the fangs.
And who are your customers? Who comes in and wants to get fangs?
Oh, my God. My customers are a unique species of human. you would never recognize them on the street.
With or without their fangs?
Well, the cool thing about the fangs is they're removable, but it has the same psychology behind it as a tattoo or a body piercing. It touches into to my customer's primal nature, the reptilian brain, and brings out this kind of like predatory vibe in them, but more on a societal level.
And you've even, I gather, got some customers down on Wall Street at the big banks.
Whoa, yes. It's very interesting because in this little fang room, you'll have a plumber, and then you'll have a multi-million dollar banker, and then a mom will come in, and then another banker will come in, and then a celebrity will come in, and everybody won't even recognize them until they sit down and go, oh my God, that actor was in Twilight. And they're like, don't tell anybody. My contract says I can't wear fangs.
And does it stay interesting for you? Do you still like doing it?
Yeah. But after 18 years, it just gets more and more bizarre because the people that I have as my customers.
Father Sebastian Van Houten, thank you so much.
My pleasure, and have a great Halloween.
Snow White, Cinderella, Princess Jasmine, and introducing the latest Disney princess, Princess Leia. Disney is buying Lucasfilm, the entire Star Wars franchise, for $4 billion. Disney says it'll start making a new Star Wars movie to hit theaters in 2015. Here's Marketplace's David Weinberg.
George Lucas and Disney aren't exactly strangers. At Disneyland, you can travel through the galaxy with R2-D2. And the Star Tours ride, which Lucas helped create.
And this acquisition builds on that foundation and combines two of the strongest family entertainment brands in the world.
Disney CEO Bob Iger made the announcement in a conference call yesterday. Industry analyst Kevin Cloudon with the Milken Institute is not surprised by the move. He says Disney paved the way for this deal when it paid billions for superheroes in its 2009 purchase of Marvel.
Disney has really demonstrated that they are focused on acquiring talent and content.
In the Lucasfilm deal, Disney also announced that it will release a new Star Wars film every couple years. Some fans are worried the franchise could become Disney-fied. After all, no one wants to see Chewbacca burst into song.
The fact is that even though a certain number of people may or may not love the prequels, they're big business.
A business that includes Lucas's three other production companies and the Indiana Jones franchise. I'm David Weinberg from Marketplace.
And hey, let's not forget about the fans. If you have a Star Wars fan in your life, and I'll admit I'm kind of one, you know they take this stuff pretty seriously. YouTube is filling up with reactions. Some folks are excited at the prospect of more Star Wars movies. I'd say there are probably many more like this guy.
That's not a joke. I'm serious. Disney bought Star Wars.
No! That's not true! That's impossible!
That's from a YouTube channel known as The Locker Gnome. I admit, I share his trepidation, if only because of the money I'm likely to spend. My 4-year-old's choice for Halloween tonight, C-3PO. Well, I'm Jeff Horwich, and that is all for today's Marketplace Midday Update podcast. This is APM, American Public Media.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.